I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, blue is still after Chelsea spent all that money in the transfer window. We'll be getting into that. We'll be getting into some of the broader issues that people raise about, oh, the Premier League destroying the transfer market for everybody. User sounds coming out of Italy and Spain. And of course, but there's so much else going on because we have League Cup finalists, Newcastle and Manchester United.
That's
who
could
have possibly foreseen that?
Exactly.
Pogba, not back.
Not yet.
Mbappe missing penalties.
No!
I know. Joao Cancelo, I think that's an underreported story. But let's start with the window that everybody loves quoting, like, oh, look, they spent this much. And I think we need to, first of all, absolute spend doesn't really, gross spend
no,
doesn't really
net
matter.
Spend.
You need to look at the
We've said
spend,
that many times.
We've said it many times. Yeah. Net spend, Premier League, absolutely out-muscling everybody. And so as a result, you have it again coming from the usual suspects in Italy and Spain saying, oh, UEFA need to do something. We need a Super League, blah, blah, blah. And then when you explain, when you ask them, like, how would a Super League fix this? They're like, they don't know.
No, it's just they would get more revenue, which they don't get now, which Premier League clubs do, for example.
Well, no, only those clubs that would be in the Super League would get it. And by the way, you know, in the Super League parent, six of the clubs in it,
that's right,
more than any other country, were a Premier League club. So they'd be getting all the extra money from the Super League and then having all the extra money that they get from the Premier League.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get philosophical about it, but I will. It's not just about money. They can spend more money because they make more money, because they have bigger television contracts, because they have bigger commercial deals, because whether we like it or not, English is the lingua franca of the world, and they've been better at selling it. People don't just buy something because it's high quality.
Selling the stadium every week, everywhere.
Exactly. All these things come into it. And before people, you know, come out and say, oh, Man City, financial fair play, fine. Then I can go back and talk about Qatar, right? And Paris Saint-Germain. I can talk about Barcelona and his levers. I can talk about Juventus now having serious issues with false accounting. So, I want to hear a coherent message. And for me, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, I think this becomes a problem that UEFA need to face when English clubs go into Europe and start destroying, not just when they buy more players, but when they start destroying the opposition on the pitch. And guess what? We're not there yet.
Not yet, no, because as we've seen in the last 10 years, English clubs don't win the Champions League every single year. I think they've only won it three times in the last 10 years or something like that.
Or the Europa League or the Conference.
Yes, we had a final between City and Chelsea 2 years ago. So, okay, I get that. Because Premier League clubs don't spend their money well. You know, the day where they spend their money well, then maybe we can worry because they should be much better. However, now this is not the case. But it's true that they've got financial power that others don't have. Javier Tebas can say as much as he wants that Premier League clubs are cheating. They're not cheating. It's their money. They have the money. They spend it.
Right.
And if you look at the seven clubs that are under scrutiny from FFP right now, none of them are English. You've got PSG, you've got Marseille, you've got Italian clubs, you've got Turkish clubs. But because the Premier League's books, even if some clubs lose some money, they've got controlled debts, but they still have debts, but they're controlled. You know, they have that money to spend. So why would you not spend them?
I think also a lot of these numbers were inflated by the tremendous amount of spending that one specific English club did. And that club, of course, is Chelsea. I have a column up saying that, you know, this is a gamble. It's a gamble on many different levels, starting with financial sustainability regulations, both in the Premier League and in Europe. Just from a sporting perspective, I mean, we were talking off air before. They've spent all this money. They've assembled all this young talent.
Yeah.
Enzo Fernandez, of course, being the shining light in January. Nkunku's coming in the summer. But when we try to make a prospective lineup, like a 1-11 lineup, I still see, in terms of quality, I still see two major holes at center forward and in central midfield.
Yeah, I think you're right, Gab. I mean, you can sign 18 players between the summer and the winter, spend over £600 million, and still, when you look at it, think like, that squad is not complete. You've got great depth and you've got plenty of options for Graham Potter, maybe too many, maybe it's too many players. But you still think like, okay, what are you going to do when Lukaku comes back? What do you do as a centre forward?
Maybe he's your centre forward.
Maybe he's your centre forward. Maybe not. But, you know, who plays with Enzo?
I have a very long piece up on the website. I know you love it when I plug my own
pieces.
But I think people want to know this. there's two vantage points, I think, to look at what they're doing, what Igbali and Boli really are the ones driving it. Let's make it very clear. They do not own the club personally, right? They have other partners in it, which people seem to often forget, who have put their faith in them. And also, they represent funds. They represent funds where they have clients who have given them money to manage.
That's right.
And, you know, those clients, it's not like they're doing it, oh, yeah, I'm a crazy Chelsea fan. No, they're doing it because they want to see a return.
That's right.
And so Boli and Igbali have pledged to deliver a return to this. I think they've been very clear and they've been very honest about this. So Kieran O'Connor, who writes the Swiss Ramble newsletter, he did a, and again, I have the link up to it up in my piece and whatnot. He did sort of a forensic analysis of Chelsea's finances, and he made some estimates and he made some modeling, he made some projections, and there may be some things that he doesn't know. But the conclusion that he came to, I mean, this guy really knows his onions.
Yeah, that's
right?
what he does.
Yeah, that's what he does, right? So was that in this column that he posted after the Mudryk deal, so before Noni Madueka, before Malo Gusto, and before Enzo Fernandez, he reached the conclusion that Premier League, financial fair play, they were going to be fine. They have a big margin because of player trading activity they did before, which was very lucrative, but which will only stick around for like another year or so. After that, they're going to have to rebalance things a little bit. In terms of UEFA's new financial sustainability regulations, there's two pieces to it. One is the losses that you can make over 3 years. It's a bit more complicated. Again, I link to the regulations if you're a nerd and you want to read them. He came to the conclusion that they were probably over, but you know, it wouldn't take much to get them to be compliant. And for the financial sustainability rules, where it's it's a percentage of essentially your wages plus your amortization, plus what you pay your coaching staff, net of your transfer spend, or your plus or minus in the transfer window, that window, it can't be more than 90% of your revenue. On that front, he said they're in breach, so they're going to have to sell players in the summer.
Yeah, which is what we said. The squad right now must be 30 players and the wage bill is enormous.
But this was before they went out and spent all that money on Enzo, Madueke, and Malo Gusto. Yeah. Now, I've kind of worked out based on the length of their contracts that their amortization hits, and we've talked about how they spread things out. This is before UEFA haven't actually passed the rule yet that you can only amortize over 5 years. Yeah. So that's a whole other kettle of fish. They'll be able to amortize over longer periods of time, but even with that, you know, they will have added, I think it's something on the order of another 20 million to the amortization plus
every,
their wages.
Every year. Yeah.
Plus, obviously, that, I mean, it'll be offset a little bit by Jorginho leaving and obviously Conte's leaving, but you're really on the edge here.
You are on the edge. It's a thin line. And I'm sure they've got people at the club looking into, like, you know, checking this out, making sure that they don't take too many risks, because what happens if you don't qualify for the Champions League game? What happens if you get knocked out, for example, in the last 16 by Dortmund? So you miss out on all the prize money from winning your last 16, quarterfinal, semi-final, final, which easily from there on, if you go and win it, it's probably another 50 million.
I think a little more than that if they were to win it. But let's say, realistically, let's say they were planning, you know, most teams budget at that level budget for the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
If you lose here, you know, you miss out on probably 10 to 15 million, depending.
Okay, so then if you don't qualify for the Champions League for next season, currently, let's remind everybody that Chelsea are 10th in the table, and they have a lot of points to, I think, are they 10 points behind them for something like that?
It's something, yeah. Yes, they are 10 points behind. There's 18 games to go.
Yeah,
and they
have to overtake all the teams ahead of them.
They have to overtake seven teams.
Yeah, that's right. So what if you get next season with that wage bill? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can sell players like Gallagher, like Loftus-Cheek, like Hudson-Odoi, like, you know, those guys that you would not count on for next season. But without Champions League money, with that wage bill, with players on big contract, like if you are Hakim Ziyech right now, after what happened with PSG, and clearly like Chelsea really messed him up, you don't want to do them any favors, really. You know, and I think there might be other, and this is what you said when we were preparing for the show, is like, great to give long contracts, great to give 8 years, 7 years and spread the cost over those years. The problem is that if someone doesn't want to be there or is not good enough, or you try to sell in the second year of his 7 year contract, then you have to sell him a certain amount of money not to lose money on him.
Yeah. So, this is a point that, you know, again, I'll use Lukaku as an example, right? Chelsea paid round about a little more than 100 million euros.
In the previous regime.
Previous regime. To do with Bodies, no, but this just kind of tells you the impact of it, right? So I'm just going to use round figures. So essentially, they're on the hook for 20 million every year in amortization for Lukaku. He signed a 5-year contract. So just from an amortization perspective, if they were to sell him after this season, which is going to be pretty difficult. He's only made 4 starts in the league. Yeah. He's had his injuries. You know, he's 30 years old. And on top of that, he has an enormous contract. Again, previous regime, you know, you're not going to. But I think I'm led to believe his contract is on the order of 15 million euros a year, right? 15 to 18 million euros a year. So basically, he is costing you between 35 and 38 million euros a season.
Yeah.
If you sell him for less than 60 million this summer, then sure, you'll save money in his contract because somebody else will take him. But say you sell him for 30 million, which I think would already be a stretch for Lukaku.
Yeah, yeah.
You've made a 30 million loss on that.
On the player.
So then you got to go and make up for it somewhere else. I think we mentioned the youth team players. You were mentioning a lot of first teamers that you know would have a market were they to sell them. Now, obviously, you're not going to sell Mount or Reece James or, you know, unless they really want to go, which I don't think they want to go. Loftus-Cheek, maybe, possibly. Although, again, injuries with him and he's on substantial wages, but, you know, this is a mid-table Premier League side. I think where they can make a good amount of money back is operating lower down, right? So a lot of these guys who are youth academy products who are out on loan. Tino Angerin, for example, Dujon Sterling, guys, Xavier Simmons, guys like that. And maybe, you know, 5 million here, 10 million there, maybe. Because remember, when you sell them, you book these guys sort of residual amortization is zero because they came through the youth academy.
Yeah.
So it's pure profit when you sell them. But there's two things to that. One is it kind of maybe doesn't send the greatest message to these kids. And two, you know, you can only do that so many times. You know, at some point, the pipeline runs out.
So. Yeah, you would think so. It's tricky. And I get the fact that new owners come in. It's a squad. Even before that, Tuchel used to say that he needed work done on it. Fine. Have they done too much? Too soon, too quickly to sign all those players in the space of 6 months? Time will tell. I do think that this must be it's a big squad for Graham Potter to manage, to keep people happy, to find the right formula, the right option, et cetera, et cetera. We often say like, oh, it's great to have options, but maybe too many options. I don't know. Maybe it's not that great. There's the fact that, and we reminded everybody on Tuesday on the FC show, is that they've signed 7 players in January. Only 3 of them will be able to be registered for the Champions League knockout stages. So out of all of them, Joao Felix, Mudryk, Enzo, Badiashile, Andre Santos, Madueke, and...
Oh, Malagusto's the other one, but obviously he's still in Lyon.
Yeah, I thought there was another one.
Oh, yeah, David Fofana.
Oh, yeah, and David Fofana. Four of the 7 are going to miss out on Champions League. And by the way, the B list doesn't work. You need to have been at the club for 2 years if you're under 21, on the 22 to be able to register on the B list. So there's no B list here. Don't listen to what other channels are.
Let's play Graham Potter. Which 3 do you put on the list?
For me, it's very easy. Enzo, Badiashile, and Mudryk.
Yeah,
Joao Felix, for the people who say Joao Felix, I understand. And it's a problem if he's been scoring in great form in the league and you can't use him in the Champions League. But he's on loan. He's gonna leave you in 4 months. So
or not. But no, I agree 100% for another reason too. I mean, look, Enzo's nobody's gonna argue with, right? I think Badiashile has to be one of the 3 simply because Thiago Silva's not getting younger.
Yeah.
You never know about Wesley Fofana's health.
Yeah.
you know, Koulibaly's not getting younger. So you've got, and Chalobah's injured now as well.
Yep.
So you have all these questions. You need Badiashile because he is a body and he's fit and he's productive. I'm not saying
he's played well, yeah.
He's a better player than João Félix or Mortão,
because he
isn't. But, you know.
And also, let's not forget that the group of 25 players in the Champions League, now is 24 because Jorginho has left, but you can't have more than 25. So you're going to add three players in that group of 24. So two have to come out. And they can't be home ground. So who are you going to take out from the current squad? Is he a Wesley Fofana because he's not fit?
Ziyech, Pulisic.
So you're going to go and see Christian Pulisic and say, hey, listen, we like you, but you're not going to play in the Champions League again this season.
I don't know. You've got to make choices.
This is tricky. This is really hard. And,
yeah. And those choices will fall on Graham. And then this is the other tricky thing, right? You're asking Graham Potter to go and make these choices and make these decisions, and he's the manager and it's up to him. These are not decisions he's ever had to make before.
No, that's true.
You know, he's a coach. He's never faced these situations. And he seems like a nurturing, intelligent guy as a person with a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
But it's still not an easy thing to do.
No.
So I think there's uncertainty there. Other people have floated to me the possibility that maybe Boli and Igbali know something that we don't. Maybe Boli and Igbali have received assurances, maybe from the head of the European Clubs Association, that, oh, don't worry, this is all just for show. Those of us who are putting in money, we'll continue to do what we want. UEFA aren't going to be able to enforce these rules that we all wrote together. You know,
from an FFP point of view, you mean?
Maybe that's what they believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they believe that, even though they're not pushing for it, and, you know, I mean, Boli's on the record saying, well, Super League, you know, I'm never going to take anything off the table, but we don't need a Super League right now because of the Champions League, whatever. Maybe they believe they're going to go down that route. I genuinely don't know. Maybe they believe that, and this is the other thing with money, right? If revenues continue to rise and transfer spending continues to rise across the board, then all of a sudden it's not going to be that, you know, that we said, oh, it's going to be hard to get 30 million for Lukaku. Well, or sorry, 60 million for Lukaku. Well, if everybody's revenues go up, it's like inflation, then maybe 60 million won't be that much anymore. But like, there's a lot of gambles. There's a lot of question marks.
I know.
Somebody made the, made the analogy in the piece today, right? You know, the whole sort of tech ethos for the tech industry 10 years ago, Zuckerberg saying move fast and break things and be disruptive. And, you know, you fail and that's how you grow and whatever. This is kind of what they've taken to heart. This is how they appear to be moving. Now, in reality, maybe these are all very calculated risks. And like I said, maybe they know something that we don't.
I think what's incredible is that we've had other American owners in the league, and none of them really have gone in like that and just, as you say, went in straight away, like, you know, two foot tackle straight in, and they're like, we're gonna buy this and this, the best player in the world, we're gonna spend, we're gonna shake things up, we want to you know, make a mark, we want to do this. You know, the others have been pretty, whether you like them or not, whether you like the Glazers, the Kroenkes, FSG, whatever, it doesn't matter. But this is for the league, and at least they're quite really traditional if you think about, you know, in like English people, right, in general. It's, you know,
what I think is interesting too is, while they haven't spoken very often, when they have spoken, to me, they don't give off the impression that, you know, they have some mega innovative plan. In fact, they give the impression that maybe they're putting their faith in some of the wrong things. And I'll give you an example, right? So Igbali spoke just before at the Sportico conference just before Christmas, and right, he said the Premier League is 20 years behind American sport. Yeah. Blah blah blah. Right, we've heard this before. Right, and yeah, again, I kind of feel like a Kroenke and the Glazers and Fenway. What are they, stupid? They don't realize this. Like, they haven't tried. You know, is there a reason? But whatever. But he also, they keep going about, oh, data. We use data. And he always mentions that he spoke to some old school sporting director, and he says, I don't need data, I have my eyes, or whatever.
The same line.
You know what? Like, I think every single club uses data in the Premier League anyway, right?
Sure.
Around Europe, like these data companies, the one I'm most familiar with has more than 200 clients around Europe.
Exactly.
Now, are your data people smarter than the other data people? Maybe. But this idea that you're going there and everybody else just has like a, you know, a scout in a shell suit, you know, with a dog looking at the game and signing guys based on that, you know, is wrong. They're all doing that. Now, your data guys may be better, maybe worse.
Yeah.
The one thing that makes me slightly, and look, Brighton were huge users of data, of course, as we know. The other thing that makes me slightly uneasy is, you know, when they, I think very clearly, they've looked at Salzburg in particular, but also, mm-hmm. also Leipzig and the Red Bull group. And they said, oh, look, these guys sign people from the lower divisions, from minor leagues, and then they go and resell them for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let's bring in those people. That's their know-how. And look, it works, right? It works very well for Salzburg.
Yeah.
The difference is that Salzburg will buy 20 kids for $500,000.
Yeah.
And spend $10 million in total. And then out of those 20 kids, 15 of them go nowhere. On a couple of them, you get your money back. A couple of them might play for your first team at Salzburg level. And then yeah. one guy you sell for $20 million and like, hey, look, I 2X my money. The problem is you can sell players for $20 million. There's a market for $20 million players. Yeah. If you're buying players for $30 million, for $13 million, like with Fofana, for $35 million, whatever Madueka costs, yeah. that's a whole different ball game. Because if the same percentage of people flame out, then you to hit the home run, to hit the jackpot, you need to start selling guys for $150 million.
Yeah.
And if you have $150 million euro player and you're Chelsea, you'll probably want to keep them to go and win things and keep growing the clubs rather than selling them. Not to mention, there aren't going to be that many clubs who can afford them.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a different cost dynamic too, based on what they were doing before. And these are all things that, you know, these are all things that strike me. And again, maybe I'm being conservative. Maybe
no, but
they're taking risks. They're taking risks with their clients' money, right? Yeah. And their own money. And this is their reps. And I'm okay with it. People who take risks are often the real innovators who succeed.
Yeah, maybe for sure. I think if you're a Chelsea fan right now, you must be excited, and you should be excited, because the recruitment and the players, the quality is amazing. You should be a little bit worried as well, because as we've explained, if there's no Champions League, if something happened in this current season in Champions League, then we're not really sure what could happen or what's going to happen. And you need to trust them. And maybe right now it's hard to trust them because, again, it looks very much like they've tried to sign every man and his dog without really any, well, no, there's a direction, but do you know what I mean? Considering that they signed 18 players and they're still holding that team.
Right.
But trust them and then see and give them a bit of time because that's what you have to do.
I want to kind of knock, because other people said, oh, they know there's a Super League coming and whatever and the ruling. I would strongly argue that there isn't. Because if there were, the Glazers and Fenway would not be looking to sell their clubs, yeah. right? I mean, I'm making some assumptions. One assumption is if there's a Super League, Liverpool and certainly Manchester United will be in it, right? Yeah. I think that's a very fair, logical assumption.
For sure.
So surely they would know. And the fact that they're selling, to me, suggests, because obviously the minute there's a Super League, Manchester United doubles in value, right?
Yeah.
We agree with that, right? So the fact that, to me, suggests that, A, there isn't one coming, that, of course, you're going to have the ruling from the European Court of Justice at some point in the next months, maybe as late mm-hmm. as June. But equally, that tells me that the Glazers don't believe the ruling is going to go in favor of legislation that could lead to a Super League, right?
Yeah.
Because if they did, he could hang on another year, right?
Sure.
What does he care, right?
Yeah.
So I think we can put that on the head. I wonder if we go back to the other point that we made about the spending of the Premier League clubs. And again, these figures, these global figures are inflated by, essentially they're inflated
true,
by.
But still, the point is still there. That only one club, right, has signed a player for more than 15 million euros outside of England this month. Nobody in Spain, nobody in Italy, nobody in Germany have signed a player for more than 15 million euros. The only club is Marseille, who signed Vitinha from Braga for 32 million.
That is
a crazy, crazy figure.
How many clubs have signed in England, have signed clubs for more than 15 million?
I think it was 18, maybe.
18, well, 18 that many?
18 players, maybe.
Because Manchester United haven't. Manchester City haven't.
So there was obviously the 7 from Chelsea or 8 from Chelsea.
Oh, no, I'm talking number of players, not number of clubs.
Kivior, Trossard. Oh, no, that was number of players, I was saying.
Right.
But still, you have one for the other big leagues, and then how many remember from the Premier
League? Is this something UEFA should get involved in? Is it something that UEFA...
But do you think, is it possible to cap the transfer? So, you know, like a club, whatever club that is, mm-hmm. cannot spend more than 200 million euros per transfer window. Is this possible to do? So then you have to pick. If you're Chelsea, you say, okay, well, we're going to sign one guy for 200 million, and that's Kylian. If you someone else, you say, okay, I'm going to move by four.
Are you talking net spend or are you talking gross spend?
I don't know. We can work out, you and I can work out the technicality. No, but you know what I mean? Is that the way forward?
I don't know. The problem there that you get into is when you do it based on figures. You'd have to look at figures plus wages.
No.
You'd have to answer the question also, why are you doing this? Are you doing this because you want other clubs on the continent to spend money? I don't think this is something you need to be concerned about necessarily.
Yeah.
Until this translates into some massive dominance on the pitch for the Premier League clubs. And frankly, right now it's not there. You know,
that's true.
When we ask ourselves, you know, if I were to ask you right now, how many Premier League clubs, there's four Premier League clubs in the round of 16 of the Champions League, right? Yeah. How many of them do you think are going to reach the semifinals?
My
over-under is two.
Yeah, I was going to say one. I think that City might be the only one. But,
so then
yeah,
what are we talking about, right? Europa League, we think Manchester United would be favorite to Europa League. Oh, look, who are they playing? Barcelona, yeah. Right? I don't know about that.
No, yeah.
Conference,
sure.
I have no idea because I'm not really paying attention.
West Ham.
Right. Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they've got bigger fish to fry, right? Yeah. Domestically. So I don't know that, leaving aside the other fact that UEFA doesn't control transfers, that's a FIFA issue, yeah, right? Yeah. I don't know that we're in this situation where if you look at UEFA coefficient, England is first. Spain isn't that far behind.
No.
And then there's a huge gap and then it's Germany and Italy. Or I think Italy and Germany still, although that could change. So I don't know we're at that level. I think what we have is a lot of people being annoyed that their clubs aren't spending money and, you know, Bournemouth are buying Zabarni for 20 million, you know, yeah. And this guy I've never heard of, why are you spending all this money? All right, fine. You know, it's a different revenue model.
No, it is. And also, and something that a French club said to me during this month is that French clubs, well, not all of them, but most of them need the money from the Premier League. And I do believe that the Premier League bankrolls European football in a way. If Premier League clubs like Chelsea were and United and City and Arsenal were only buying players from the Premier League, you know, and the money would stay in this country, which would make every other Premier League club stronger in a way because they would get even more money in to reinvest. But the thing is that French clubs need to transfer a player to the Premier League for 40 million to balance their book. Right. You know, they often at the start of the season, they budget for it even. You know, they budget for, let's hope that we can sell Malo Gusto for 40 million to a club. Sometimes some sporting directors in France even joke saying like, I've got this young player, not very good, but I'm sure they would be like, you know, like a stupid sporting director in England who's going to offer me 25 million because he plays in Ligue 1, he's French, and he's, you know, he's good technically, that kind of stuff. So I also think that, yes, of course, they spend far more money than everybody else, and I'm not sure how good it is for the game. However, a lot of other clubs in other countries need that money. And, you know, some stay alive because of that money. Some can reinvest thanks to that money. It's really important as well.
I mean, I think this comes to a broader sustainability piece. I do think the new rules are going to have an impact. I think you're already seeing in Spain the impact that they've had because they've been enforced. I think that is a credit to...
And Tebas wants that for every league.
I think he's right. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people in the Premier League would have no problem with that whatsoever because obviously, especially now that you have a lot of owners who want to make money. There's an over-reliance on player trading and accounting and amortization to go and make the books work. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at because, you know, you create all sorts of issues with that. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab.
Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough, Chelsea. Enough transfers. How about some quick hits instead?
Yeah, let's go, Gab.
Goals from Fredgie and Martial fire Manchester United to a 2-0 victory over Nottingham Forest, and they're through to the League Cup final. Jules, not a surprise since they won the first leg 3-0. So let me ask you instead, rather than the game, about Jadon Sancho, who came off the bench for his first appearance since October. Is this, in the immortal words of Arsene Wenger, like a new signing?
I don't know. I hope so, of course. I mean, let's hope that he's well, you know, mentally, physically, that the problems that he had in the last few weeks, few months are behind him, because what we want to see is him on the pitch, enjoying his football, enjoying his life, playing for United. And if he comes back at that kind of level, then of course he can help them. He can help them because the best version of Jadon Sancho that we saw at Dortmund, for example, is an amazing player. So it's been difficult for him since he joined United. But I think Ten Hag can be also the right coach to kind of give him a structure, talk to him, do a bit like what he did maybe with Marcus Rashford to a certain extent, and get the best again out of Jadon Sancho.
I'll tell you what, I feel like people forgot about him a little bit. And for me, if Jadon Sancho is even 80% of what he was at Borussia Dortmund, then it's a no-brainer. You play Sancho and Rashford on the wings. Antony, we'll see you later.
Yeah.
And then play whatever, Martial or Horse, whoever you want through the middle.
Sticking with United, Christian Eriksen will be out until April because of that terrible tackle from Andy Carroll in the Reading FA Cup game. So they picked up Marcel Sabitzer from Bayern on loan. Is that a deal that you like?
I do. It's a body in, a body out. I mean, they were low on bodies in central midfield for whatever reason, because, you know, again, it's McTominay, Casemiro, it's Fredge. Am I forgetting anybody?
No, then kids from the academy.
And then kids, right? Yeah. So you need somebody in. Bonuses with Sabitzer. I mean, completely different profile of player, but, you know, he is, I think he's more of, Eriksen we know covers a lot of ground and is very intelligent. Sabitzer, I think, is more of an energy player. You're getting somebody who's been in a big club environment. I don't think he's going to hurt you. I think it was important to have somebody in. In fact, I might have actually brought two guys in.
You need the best Sabitzer, though, the one from Leipzig, not the one from Bayern that has hardly played in 18 months.
No, that's fine. But it's a better solution than moving Phil Jones into midfield, right?
Of course. No. But let's hope that they get that one.
By the way, it is funny. I'm told, my understanding is, that a year ago, when Ralf Rangnick was there and he saw that they didn't have enough bodies in midfield, suggested maybe if we don't want to spend, blah, 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 can we bring this guy on loan, bring that guy? It's like, oh, no. We don't take players on loan. We loan young players out. Like, you know. That's interesting. Times change, Bayern destroyed Mainz 4-0 in the German Cup, and Jean Cancelo has an immediate impact. Jules, how much do we read into the result after three straight draws?
Yeah, that's true.
But more importantly, more interestingly, does it make any sense to you that João Cancelo is no longer a Manchester City player?
So let's start with the game. I mean,
at least for now, he still is on. I think there's an option to buy
for
this 70 million.
But for someone who turns 29 in May, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's a classic thing. Yeah, if they want him to stay and he wants to stay and Pep's still there, they lowball and get him for less.
Let's start for the game. I mean, they smashed them. They scored early. They started on the front foot well. They had to anyway after the last three draws. So no problem. Mainz were just overwhelmed. For Cancelo, there's a couple of things. One, he lost his place in the team. He was not a starter anymore, guaranteed starter for City and Pep. I think Pep liked Ake, liked Rico Lewis. Kyle Walker was there.
Yeah, I like them too. Nice guys. But João Cancelo is a much better player than all
those Cancelo
people.
João Cancelo was not good this season.
No, but he is a much better player.
He's 29 in May and he's not good this season. That's why he's not starting. Otherwise, Pep would start him.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like Sterling was no longer good and Zinchenko was no longer good.
Well, Sterling hasn't been good this season either.
Okay. I'll mention the Z word then. But
You see what I mean? So, and Cancelo comes to see you or Pep. I come to see you and say, listen, I don't want to be here anymore. You don't play me. I don't know why. I do think that Pep and Cancelo fell out. Even if Cancelo said no. So if you're Pep, you're like, you don't want to be here? No problem. We'll find you another club. This is what Pep does. So, I mean, okay, yeah, maybe you can say the very good Cancelo that we saw at times last season for most of it. Yeah, you know, the inverted Cancelo, the Cancelo that is another creator in midfield, etc. But we've seen none of that from Cancelo this season. You know, his numbers are down massively compared to last season in every compartment.
I just wonder. Well, I mean, I think it's a plus for Bayern. Davies scoring again, turning it around after shocker at the weekend. So all of that is good. Not so great if you're Mazraoui, but you know, maybe they'll play João Cancelo midfield.
Yeah, maybe. Cremonese are last in Serie A and haven't won a single game yet in the league. But after knocking out Napoli at the Stadio Maradona, they beat Roma away too in the Coppa d'Italia, Gab, and they are in the semi-final. That's the magic of the cup. But what happened to Roma?
It is the magic of the cup. So Mourinho made some changes. You know, he played Belotti up front. It was actually fine.
Yeah.
Put Dybala on the bench. Roma made defensive mistakes. Marash Kumbula not filled with glory. The second goal as well, also a mistake.
Yeah, terrible.
And in the end, it's the magic of the club. I mean, Cremonese, it's a great story.
It's
obviously
incredible.
This is the club where Gianluca Vialli started out. Technically, Luca started at Pizzighettone and then moved to Cremonese, but it's a club where he made his professional debut. So, you know, it's a great story in the year. Yeah, I think people are excited. You know, Mourinho said, fair play to them. I mean, what else are you going to say? And there's a Kim Kardashian angle, too.
Well, yeah, there is, because I don't know if you saw this week, but Kim Kardashian was, out there in the streets wearing a Roma 97-98 shirt. So clearly watching
as
our
you
show
do.
And, copying us, which is fine. But what was
Did
incredible?
You send her the shirt?
No, I didn't. But hey, Kim, reach out if you want some. You know, me and my boys at Classic Football Show, we can sort you out. But what was crazy, Gab, is that after people seeing those photos and her with the shirt, the search on Google for the Roma 97-98 or for Roma shirts in general went up 2.3 million. So like people all around the world were like, I want that shirt. I want that Roma shirt. So, you know, at least some money would be coming Roma way for their show or their former shirts.
I guarantee you Roma they've already invited her over to the Olympico for a game.
So.
Barcelona win again, defeating Betis 2-1 on the road and extending their lead over Real Madrid to 8 points, though with one more game played.
Yeah.
Jules, this was an important win after a not great performance against Girona. And I think it's safe to say they're a slightly better team when Robert Lewandowski's up front.
Yeah, of course. He was back, obviously, after the three-game suspension. And he scored two very opportunistic goals. I thought they played great. And Xavi said after the game, he said, one of our best performances. Even without Dembele, Rafinha played kind of, you know, position for position. And they
controlled. It's not the same thing, by the way.
No, it's not the same thing, but, you know, they... Rafinha scored, to be fair, was involved in the second goal as well. They played well, they controlled the game and the pace of the game really well, and Betis are a good team that was really, really kept quite quiet until they scored the one goal at the end. But I think for a long time it looked like Barca would win this game 1-0. In the end it was 2-1, but they were very solid defensively. Again, they've only conceded seven goals in the league, and three of them were against Real Madrid.
Vastly outperforming XG on that one.
Yeah, but still.
Comedy on goal for Jules Koundé, but we don't need to talk about that.
No,
I will say this, though.
Of course we don't.
They are a lot more of a gritty, mentally tough team.
They've been all season,
than, you know, the stereotype of Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I think that's another credit to Xavi.
Yeah. Jorginho moves from West London to North London, Gab, on that light day. It is... the rare deal that helps both clubs, do you think?
I think we're both in agreement on this. 100%. Yeah. Chelsea gets a much-needed cash in. They get Jorginho's wages off the books. He was going to be a free agent in the summer anyway. It's good for Georgie. He gets to compete for a title.
Yeah.
One of the few titles he hasn't won, by the way.
Well, that's right.
The Premier League title. And it's good for Arsenal because they have another... experienced, cool head in the mix in midfield. Now, obviously, what I'm interested in is a very different profile from Thomas Partey and Xhaka and indeed Odegaard. So is it something that he might turn to in certain situations when the opposition sits deep and defends and you look for penetrating passing or you want to keep the ball more, whatever, Partey more, somebody driving with the ball? He now has that option. I think he's more of a 12th man than kind of a bona fide starter straight away.
Yeah,
anyway.
I agree. Really good. He's such an Arteta player as well. So intelligent.
Paris Saint-Germain win at Pompeii 3-1. Do you feel a bit better about Gaultier now? Or are you just getting annoyed at Kylian Mbappe missing two penalties and then getting injured?
Yeah, I'm not annoyed at Kylian. I mean, he missed his two really good saves. He takes the first one on the right of the keeper, at the right height, to be honest. And the keeper, Lecomte.
Moves early, no?
Sorry?
He moves early.
Yeah, moves early, so it's retaken. Then Kylian chose the other side. And the keeper reads that as well and saves it again. And then there's that injury. We're waiting to see more, to know more about the injury. It looks like he's behind the knee and a bit of the hamstring as well. 12 days. In 12 days, there's the Bayern first leg clash. Everybody's sweating right now in Paris, trust me. And seeing Kylian's face when he came up, I was like, no. But let's see. At least they won. They were terrible. So no, I don't feel better about Galtier. They were not very good for an hour, let's say. But then it's a lovely, lovely goal by Messi with an amazing assist by Fabian Ruiz. So
shout out to Zaire Emery as well, scoring his first goal.
The youngest ever PSG player to score in the Premier League, in the French league, 16 and 330 days. I've told you before what an amazing talent he is.
You heard that, right? Youngest ever Paris Saint-Germain in Paris Saint-Germain's history, which goes all the way back to 1970.
It doesn't matter. Somebody named Lionel Messi also scored in that game, Gab. I just mentioned it on the wonderful Fabian Ruiz assist. And we're told that he's now scored the most goals ever in Europe's big five leagues. Because that goal yesterday at Montpellier takes him to 697. And the son, Cristiano Ronaldo, had 696. Does this matter? Is this thing a thing?
Okay. I'm going to say this very clearly. Not a thing. There's a small group of nerds who sit there, love making up and not having a go at Messi, like a Messi Cristiano, most goals ever, counting national team games, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This is just stupid. What you're basically saying is because Cristiano Ronaldo, I think he scored 4 goals for Sporting before moving to Manchester United. Oh, look, Portugal, not a big five league, which, by the way, there have been periods when they were ahead of Ligue 1, at least in the UEFA standings. Yeah. Let's not count those so we can say that Messi's ahead of him. Hey, here's an idea. Why don't you count those goals? And when Messi scores another 4 goals, then you can have your stupid big five league statistic, which, by the way, doesn't count Champions League and cups. This is so dumb. And yet it resonates with these morons who are just sitting there keeping score. No, Cristiano, Messi, Factos, Ballon d'Ors. Just go away.
It's just an incredible amount of goals scored, full stop.
The two of the greatest players ever. Just appreciate them.
That's it.
Hakim Ziyech was supposed to join Paris Saint-Germain on loan from Chelsea, but the deal didn't go through. And now they're blaming each other, Jules.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how Chelsea can blame PSG. You can tell me that later. But I certainly know how PSG feel that they can blame Chelsea because they said that the paperwork was signed late from Chelsea. The first time they sent the paperwork, there was a mistake in them. So PSG said, hey, can you redo it again?
Were they just busy uncorking champagne over Enzo Fernandez? We got to get rid of Ziyech.
The second time, it was not signed. PSG tried to call Chelsea many times. Nobody answered.
They were on the phone with Enzo.
Yeah. Then the third time, the signature was missing. And it's only the fourth time when they send it. And by the time they send it, it was too late. So PSG fuming and Hakim Ziyech. And rightly so, he's fuming as well.
Yeah, Ziyech, I think, is going to be really unhappy about this.
And no one wins, Gab. No one wins.
People ask, why don't they go and get their business done earlier? And I have to say, right, when did Sarabia leave?
Like
2 weeks ago, 10 days ago?
Yeah.
Everybody and their mom knew that Ziyech... That Chelsea Very wanted to move Ziyech on. I think they're haggling over 10,000, 15,000. That's why it goes down to the wire.
Yeah.
This is not a healthy situation.
No, I know. Juventus played tonight on Thursday night against Lazio in the Coppa Italia, but Paul Pogba won't be there, Gab. We know he was on the bench, obviously, at the weekend. And now Max Allegri says he'll be back to his best in 2 or 3 months, which is the end of the season.
Hey, Max. It's February right now. I think this is above all, it's just a sad story. However you feel about Pogba or Juventus, right? He signs on a free transfer. He picks up that injury. He tries to, you know, he gets a surgery. He ends up missing out on the World Cup. Yeah. We don't know what the World Cup would have been like. We don't know. But, you know, France didn't get to the final. Could Pogba have put them over the top?
Maybe.
You know, we'll never know. And now for this, I feel bad. All my interactions with Paul Pogba personally have been positive.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, this is a young man who wants to play football. He's had a difficult time and to go back for this. Obviously, for Juve, it is a big blow. And they've taken a whole bunch of you know, punches to the nose over the past couple months. Which was, this is sad because
it's sad. He turns 30 in March. And then what, a blank season pretty much?
I mean, I suppose he'll be well rested for next year.
I guess.
With or without Allegri.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is... Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Newcastle beat Southampton 2-1 in the other League Cup semifinals we mentioned before. Again, no real surprise there, but
well done.
No, at least no surprise that they're through. But how silly was Bruno Guimarães' needless red
card?
Crazy.
I mean, you qualified. I guess maybe the second half was they were a little bit more under pressure towards the end, but he goes and like stamps with his studs on the Southampton player's ankle, a bit like what we saw with Fabinho, who should have been sent off really. You know, against Brighton at the weekend as well, and VAR had to intervene, by the way, which was also crazy because I think that one should have been a straight red. You don't need any help for that, I think.
Well, they needed it with the Fabinho one at the weekend, and they didn't get it. So,
But it's a shame because he's going to miss 3 games now, all in the league. At least he'll be back on time for the final, which. I mean, seeing how important he is for
it,
does
it make sense that the whole like suspensions in the League Cup are going to apply to the league? Does it?
It is a bit weird, but
I mean, this is big for Newcastle because we've praised Newcastle so much. Bruno Guimarães
so important to them.
He's really important to them. Games, a lot of points at stake.
Yeah, no, it's true. Nicolò Zaniolo is still a Roma player. Yes, he is, and he has written an open letter to the club and to the fans. But Gab, they're not having it, are they?
No, I mean. Look, he came out and he released a letter saying, look, there were a lot of lies and untruths, you know, attributed to me. And I would assume that he's referring to him refusing to play for the club to try to force a move. Again, I don't know to what degree that's true, that's not true. That's certainly that's certainly what was reported. It's certainly what Roma fans believe. But he said, you know, I'm here. You guys have given me so much. We've grown together. I'm here till, you know. The window's closed. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, can we rebuild the relationship, at least for now? And Roma, very, 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 very cold.
Very cold.
And look, as far as Zaniolo's concerned, you know, he's received death threats. He's been harassed. Is it unprofessional behavior? He would say no. He would say wasn't quite what it was. I think this shows you how this is just really, really badly handled.
Yeah.
From Zaniolo's part, I think now at this stage, for Roma's part, he is a good player who can get you into the top four. Now, Belotti, Abraham Dybala, he doesn't need to start.
Yeah.
But it's in your interest to integrate him and see what he can contribute. You
Mourinho
know?
And his comments as well, I don't think have helped, you know, in during the month. But
No, but who knows what goes through that man's head.
I know.
Jules. You can keep your Mbappes, keep your Messis, your Lacazettes, Jonathan Davids, and your Wissam Ben Yedders. Ligue 1's top scorer is Follarin, freaking Balogun. Take that.
Incredible. I mean, incredible. The Arsenal striker on loan at Reims, who's having the season of his life. He's 21. He scored a hat-trick in 20 minutes last night on Wednesday night. Against Lorient, just like, I mean, the first one is a penalty, okay, but then the other two, like a right foot volley, a left foot volley, the movement is amazing. He scored against PSG, remember? We mentioned it on Monday.
It's the Will Still effect.
But even when Will Still was not the coach yet and he was only the assistant coach, Follarin was already great. He's just like, wow, 14 goals and the confidence is high. He's got everything. He's been amazing. Really, really amazing. I don't know what Arsenal do now. Do you bring him back? Do you loan him again? Like I said, he's 21. Do you integrate into your first squad for next season with Gabriel Jesus and Nketiah? But how much is he going to play?
Wait, Gabriel Jesus can play on the wing if needed. Nketiah, I'm sorry. I don't bring up whatever stats you want about his goals, starts, whatever. Eddie Nketiah is still Eddie Nketiah. At least you give Balogun a chance to win a starting spot.
Yeah, no, I mean.
I think you need, you can use three center forwards over a season. But the important thing, because I'm wondering, will he still be as effective without Will Still? So maybe you consider, Will Still is only 30 years old. He doesn't have proper badges yet. Maybe you bring Will Still over and you make him one of Arteta's assistant.
Nice idea.
As long as Balogun is there.
Yeah, maybe. Ecosy Madrid has ruled in favor of the European Super Cup clubs. Super League club, sorry, reaffirming the fact that FIFA and UEFA do not have the right to sanction them. Gab, is this a big deal?
No, it's completely irrelevant. And I'm surprised by the number of people who came out and, you know, got all their panties in a twist over this. And, you know, A22 putting her. It's irrelevant because this court will be subordinate to whatever the ruling is from the European Court of Justice. We've had the preliminary one, which seems to lean a little bit towards UEFA, or quite a lot. But you know what? That is one. That's one person's opinion.
Yeah.
We need to see what the court as a whole say. We'll be getting that probably some point in between the spring, hopefully no later than June. Again, I have no idea why it takes these people like months and months. You know my feelings about the law and lawyers and judges in this case.
Yes, I do.
It seems like a really, really sweet gig, frankly. Like, hey, you have to give an opinion. Go ahead. Take a year to do it. I mean, come on. But whatever. I digress here. But no, it's not a win. I mean, this is essentially the Madrid court that filed the injunction saying, hey, FIFA and UEFA, you cannot punish the Super League clubs. Then later there was a second court which overturned that and said, no, you can punish them. UEFA did not punish them for the time being because they also know that they knew that the ECJ case, the European Court of Justice case, was coming. And then the court goes and re-overturns that. Okay, fine. You know, you can go overturn yourself if you want. that's how you get your jollies. This is going to be subordinate to what happens later on. Jules, it looks like Belgium have got themselves a new national team coach. Not confirmed, but close. And it's my favorite Italian-German.
Domenico Tedesco, the former Schalke and Leipzig manager, who looks like he's going to get that coveted job because apparently a lot of people applied to replace Roberto Martinez on the Belgium bench. Good luck to him. I mean, it worked that time in a very specific way. Schalke especially, that one amazing season they had when they finished second. And they were quite defensive. This is true. I know you love him, but it's true. He's a defensive coach more than anything else. Leipzig not so much. So it'd be interesting to see, I guess.
I love the name mostly. As if Jacques Anglais.
So tell everybody again.
How cool would it be?
Tedesco in Italian means...
German. Imagine Jacques Anglais becoming the coach of replacing Gareth Southgate with the three lions. How cool would that be?
It would be really cool. The FIFA Club World Cup kicked off in Morocco with Al Ahly beating Auckland FC 3-0. But Gab, it was Chinese referee Nan Ning who made history. What did he do?
So basically, there was a guy, Taher Mohamed, who plays for Al Ahly, who was fouled by Adam Mitchell. This guy, the referee, went and gave a penalty. VAR said, hey, Manning, it's outside the box. Go take a look at it. He does his on-field review. And then he turns around and he does what many of us have wanted referees to do the whole time. He goes and he sends him off a red card and he says, oh, look. Actually, I'm not sure what he said because the audio was terrible.
Yeah.
And the man is obviously not a native English speaker, but... essentially, he gave him a red card for denial of a goal-scoring opportunity because the foul was outside the box. And he explained his decision to the people in the stadium, like we see in the NFL every week.
Exactly.
How cool is that? This in a way that people could understand.
This is the way forward, surely.
By the way, much clearer explanation for those who saw the 49ers-Eagles game when, the silly referee. A brief VAR digression, right?
Yeah.
Even though the Devonta Smith catch, right? Like, oh, we didn't see the pictures. Like, come on, you didn't see the pictures? What are you talking about?
That catch is a little bit...
It should have been rolled off, but like... we expect the Niners would have some nerd up in a room looking at 50 screens at once and saying, like, especially once, well, whatever. But the other one which struck me was when the punt hits the wire. I don't know what the wire is. I'm assuming it's some kind of TV wire.
Yeah,
and all the referees, we couldn't see any picture that says it hit the wire. Well, why? Why don't you explain it a little bit better? Whatever. That's my digression. I'm sorry for you having to put up a football. But I'm a little bit nervous because my Eagles are in the Super Bowl.
You've got plenty of time to get more nervous.
Hazedin Unahi scores on his debut for Marseille, Jules, as they win 2-0 away to Nantes.
Yeah.
Moroccan dreams continues. Look,
incredible.
Garbage time goal, but you love your techers.
Oh,
you love your technique. Goal. This is special.
He came on a few minutes before and then threw a ball and then he controls it and then like literally twist the defender and then so cool finish is going to be amazing for them. There's no doubt. What a player.
Keeper on the backside.
Yeah, crazy. Antonio Conte has undergone a gallbladder. Is that how you say?
Gallbladder.
Gallbladder, sorry. Surgery in Italy and will be out for a while. Gab, how is he doing and when will he be back?
So surgery was successful. You know that on Saturday they played Preston in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
He didn't do the pre and post game press conferences. He was flying back to Italy either that evening or the following morning. But the point is, Sunday night, they had 2 days off and he did not feel well. Went to see a doctor. He had massive stomach pains. And they said, yeah, this is something. You have an inflamed gallbladder. We need to do this surgery. Looks like it went well. Question of when he can come back. I mean, he's definitely going to miss the Man City game.
Yeah.
It's 2 to 6 weeks for normal people to come back. Obviously, Antonio Conte, not a normal person.
Not a normal person.
So I think he'll miss the Man City game, but I think he'll be back on the 11th day of Leicester. I would expect him to be back. I mean, we have to see how he is, obviously. He certainly would hope to be back for the 11th. And if not that, the Valentine's Day clash at the San Siro, the Scala of football, Milan against Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah. Ibrahima Konate is the latest Liverpool player to pick up an injury and another muscular injury, FYI, which is a big issue among Liverpool fans right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Jules, how big a blow is this defensively, given Virgil van Dijk is already out?
Yeah, it's massive because that means more of Joe Gomez, which is never a good idea. Sorry, Joseph, but that's the truth. So Matip and Gomez going forward Ibrahima is hoping that it's not too long, 2-3 weeks maybe maximum. It's already long enough, to be fair, considering the games are coming thick and fast. But yeah, he can't, it's a shame for his own season because his own season has been...
Hasn't played much, but he's played well when he's
played. He's played really well, but, the injuries have ruined a little bit the season so far. The FA have opened an investigation into Mihailo Mudryk's use of the N-word in a video that he posted on his TikTok account in July last year. Gab, does this make sense to you?
Okay, so there's two different things. My take on this is that, as a white person, I am not qualified to tell people when they can and cannot use the N-word. To me, it's offensive. To me, we have standards that it's not acceptable. If there are people who want to use it, and he said it in the context, he was reciting lyrics from an artist named Lil Baby. Lil Baby, who is a person of color, he chooses to use that language. I don't think I'm in a position to tell Lil Baby what he can and cannot do.
No.
Am I in a position to tell Mihailo Mudryk? I think when he's here and in this context, he should know that he's a public figure and he has certain responsibilities. I don't think it's okay to make rules say it's generally acceptable. Even if you're reciting rap lyrics, it's not a call. It's not a decision given the ugly history of the world for white males to make.
Yeah.
However, Mihailo Mudryk in July, nobody knew who he was. Right. He was in Shakhtar. He was a Shakhtar Donetsk. He was nowhere near here.
Yeah.
He did this. He has come out. He has apologized to it. He has taken the video down left, right, and center. He wasn't under the jurisdiction, if you want, of the Football Association July. I don't see why you need to open an investigation and charge him and whatever. This is a very... To me, it's a very different situation. Mm. He's been educated. He has acknowledged it. I don't even know if the dude spoke English, if he's just repeating words that he hears.
So.
I don't know. It's not justification, but immediately when he's alerted to it, he went and he said, this is wrong. I'm sorry. Then I'll take it. What more do we want here?
I agree.
Sean Dyche will make his debut as Everton boss this weekend. He may have been hoping for some reinforcements in the transfer window, but Jules, he got none.
Nothing.
Though maybe Andre Ayew on his...
I don't even want to hear Andre Ayew's name being linked with Everton because that would be absolutely crazy at 33, who've been playing in Qatar for the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, Andre Ayew cannot help Everton right now. They should have spent some of the money that they got from Anthony Gordon, for example, or something. They try Olivier Giroud. I mean, why? Why would you think that Olivier Giroud would swap Milan, right? Where he's still in the Champions League, where he can still technically win the league, where he won last season. He's scoring goals. He just played the World Cup final. To go to Everton right now and fight against relegation and be in the Championship next season? Who does that recruitment? Who has those ideas?
I would love to know. I did not know about the Giroud thing. But what I find shocking is
I know they've been through, is it Thelwell is now the director of football?
I think so, yeah.
I'm going to assume he doesn't watch much Serie A or listen to our show, because if he did, he would know that now Giroud's like to play like every game for Milan,
yeah,
because Ibrahimovic is out, because Rafael Leao through the middle doesn't work, because Rebic has been injured. So Milan can't let Giroud go right now, even if they would want to, because Milan, I felt like they're going to go and sign another center forward, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just thinking to myself, why are you wasting your time with this? Look, Sean Dyche just came in. They did not have a lot of time to go and plan this. Goodness me.
I know.
By the way, if you're wondering why Andre Ayew can sign, even though the transfer window is closed, it's because
he's a free agent. Yeah.
He's a free agent.
Yeah. This was a back on Monday, Gab, a goal from Matteo Darmian sends Inter into the Coppa d'Italia semi-final with a win over Atalanta. Big win, and they will play the winner of the Juve-Lazio game from tonight.
Yeah, big win. Not a win to take for granted, given the way Atalanta have been
that's
playing.
True.
Again, Inter gutted it out. Lots of positives. I like the fact that Romelu Lukaku started and played 69 minutes.
He played,
he looked fit.
Yeah.
He was okay.
He was okay.
I think he's a huge, huge plus for Inter if they get anything resembling the real Lukaku between now and the end of the season. Pedro Porro's arrival means Matt Doherty leaves Spurs to join Atletico Madrid. Jules, the last Spurs right back to leave Spurs on a free transfer for Atletico Madrid did pretty well.
Yeah, Kieran Trippier did really well. I'm not sure Matt Doherty.
Trippier, he's not French. Trippier,
yeah. I like the way I say it. Thank you very much. He must have been French in the past. Good luck to him. I mean, they had too many players on loan. You can't have too many players on loan anymore. So sometimes you need to sign players on permanent deal to allow another loan to come in or finish the contract of a player so he can go out. I mean, this was complicated, but in the end it happened. Let's see if he can help as a squad player, you would think.
Yeah, I don't.
For the last few months of the season, you know.
I mean, it didn't seem like a pressing need necessarily. For me,
but they tried Jonathan Clauss from Marseille. They had two bids rejected by Marseille, so they were clear in for like a right wing back. So let's see. Good luck to him.
Does Jonathan Clauss have kids?
I don't think so. Why?
When he has a daughter, can you please ask him? Please call her Santa. Please, please.
He doesn't even know what Santa Clauss is. He's French. We don't have Santa Clauss. He's called Père Noël in French. Not in France. Not Santa Clauss. We don't know who Santa Clauss is.
Okay, then does Noël Legret have kids?
Oh my God.
Do they call him Père Noël?
Right, next quick hit. The government of Australia and New Zealand have written to FIFA to complain about reports that the Saudi Tourist Board could be the sponsor for the Women's World Cup, who will obviously be in the summer, this summer coming in Australia and New Zealand. Gab, what's their problem?
I have no idea. I genuinely don't know. Like, what, you agree to host the World Cup, but then it's contingent? Did you work in a clause where they say, but FIFA, we have the right to veto any potential sponsors you might want in case you're, I don't see what the issue is. It's the Saudi Tourist Board, right? Do Australia and New Zealand have sanctions against Saudi Arabia that I don't know of as a government?
I
don't believe so.
No, but you see, for two countries who are very open with LGBT plus rights and things like that, Q plus rights, sorry, Saudi Arabia is going the other extreme.
Then they can go and they can organize their own World Cup, get their own sponsors. If they're going to take FIFA's World Cup and FIFA sponsors, they can ask about it, sure, right?
Yeah.
But, in the end, the argument here is pretty clearly, unless you're willing to pass legislation, this is what really bugs me about politicians.
But maybe when they want
grandstanding, pass legislation, say, we disagree with the LGBTQ issue in your country, so we're not going to play there, we're not going to, that's fine, right?
Yeah.
But Saudi's in the World Cup. I mean, the Saudi women's
could have qualified
for the World Cup, for all they know, right?
We're not the main sponsor when they put their bid in to organize the World Cup.
There were no main sponsors. They didn't know who the main sponsors were going
to
be.
I know, true. But I don't know. I can see why they're a bit ticking, to be fair.
We nearly had a world record transfer in the women's game, Jules. This time, Arsenal fell short.
Yeah, they wanted to sign Alicia Russo from Manchester United, who's out of contract in the summer, by the way. They made a big bid and it was turned down. The current record is Kira Walsh, I believe, from Man City.
£400,000
from Man City to Barcelona, which is, when you look at the men's numbers, of course, it's not comparable.
But if she's 6 months from free agency, that's a huge bid for the women's game.
Yeah, but she's very important to Manchester United and she might come to Arsenal in the summer. But we'll see. But, you know, at least it's good that the women's game is also, like, trying to get those numbers up. There's money in the game. Not enough, for sure, but there's money and you know.
I believe Alessia's family members, of course, supported Italy
yes,
over England.
Yes, they are. We know that. I think you mentioned
maybe once. But I am curious here, right? If you're Alessia Russo, wouldn't you say, hey, Arsenal, I'll come in the summer.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That half a million you're going to give to Manchester United, how about you give a lot of that to me this summer when I come inside?
I'm sure that conversation.
Wouldn't that be kind of an obvious thing?
Yeah. Gab, the head of the College of Policing in England, Andy Marsh, has apologized to the victims of the Hillsborough disaster, saying that police had profoundly failed those
bereaved,
and that they are sorry they got it so wrong.
It's one more apology. I don't think there can ever be enough apologies. What's really going to make a difference, and this is not just, I know people roll their eyes about Hillsborough and whatever else. This is not just about Liverpool fans. This is about the way supporters going to football matches are treated, and it's about a police cover-up, which is what there was afterwards. The British government apologized for it, and David Cameron many years ago, was it like 10 years ago, something like that? At this stage, it's important that the police are reminded of this. And I don't think this is something, I don't think this is something that hurts. I don't think there's any harm in reminding people of what happened, the tragedy that happened on the day and what happened afterwards, which should have, that part, even more, I mean, the boat should have been avoided, but that part is really, really shameful, in my opinion. Ajax have a new coach, and guess what? He's not bald with stubble, which makes me uncomfortable, but he is a very handsome Johnny Huizinga, ESPN, our colleagues at ESPN in Holland, reporting this deal, maybe not confirmed yet, but pretty much done.
Pretty much done. He took the team, we said on Monday, showed him we had the weekend to replace our French runner who was sacked. They won 4-1. They were much better than anything that we've seen in the last few weeks. So he will finish the season. I think they will reassess the situation in the summer. So good luck to Johnny Huizinga. And I like the idea that former players, you know, come back and do their badges and then grow into a club as a coach, first in the youth teams and then in the first team or whatever, as an assistant, then as a main coach. So good luck to him. They're fourth in the table, so he's got a lot of work to do for them to be champions at the end of the season.
You like former players coming back and coaching?
Yeah.
You want Serge Aurier to replace...
Oh, maybe not that one. I love you, Serge, you know that. It's not just PSG, Ziyech and Chelsea who have been a mess on the last few minutes of the transfer window, Gab, because what happened to Julian Araujo and his move to Barcelona?
Yeah, Matteo Alemani saying that they weren't able to register it because it came 14 seconds late, but they have the evidence that it's not their fault, blah, blah, blah. There's shades of the Ziyech deal here. I think the difference is that, and I have to say, I think the Ziyech deal in the end was the registration with the French FA in terms of FIFA TMS and went through. Here it seems that the issue is with the FIFA transfer matching system. For those who don't know, FIFA TMS, I think, is a pretty neat piece of machinery. Back in the day, they used to FedEx, fax contracts back and forth and blah, blah, blah. Here, you reach the agreement, you upload the contract and the documentation. FIFA's lawyers and the system quickly check to make sure that all the numbers match, players eligible, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's records of where all the payments are going. And then they approve it in real time. And as long as you have it in the system, when the deadline comes in your territory, you're okay. Here, 14 seconds, and they say it's an IT glitch. They say it's beyond their control. Hey, if they can prove it, prove it. But it has to be because there's an IT glitch. It can't be because, oh, look, 14 seconds, that's no big deal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Marseille's Ruslan Malinovsky has had to apologize for hugging Monaco's Alexander Golovin over the weekend. Jules, what's this about? And does it make sense?
Yeah, so Malinovsky, Ukrainian citizen, of course. Golovin, Russian citizen. At the end of the Monaco-Marseille game last weekend, they kind of walked towards each other and, you know, say, well played. I don't know, whatever, have a hug, say hello to each other like opponents do, which has upset a lot of people in Ukraine. So now Malinovsky has had to come out and say, listen, I'm sorry, I don't want to upset anyone. I understand you don't upset people. And if you do upset people, then you apologize. Is it right to get upset when two footballers who I know are playing for two countries who are in war and, you know, one invaded the others? I get that.
like I this war really bugs me, and I think one of the tragedies of what happened with it is that we have this breakdown. Malinowski has been extremely vocal in his obviously support for Ukraine. I don't know, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, social media. I don't think Golovin's come out and said, "Oh, we should invade and whatever." Right? I don't think he's taken a political position. He's been quiet, And so then it becomes individuals.
Yeah.
And it becomes about two colleagues, two guys who presumably, I don't know how long they've known each other or whatever, they play in the same league. Yeah. Like, this is about countries and governments and military. I don't think it should be about individuals. I don't think war should ever be about individuals. And he felt compelled to apologize. All right, that's down to him. But being bullied into it, that's wrong.
I agree. A report in the Spanish newspaper El Mundo suggests, Gab, that the Saudi government is pursuing Luka Modric, Karim Benzema, and Sergio Ramos to come and play in the league next season. Can you see them joining Cristiano?
Well, it even said like, oh yeah, and you can choose whichever team you like and blah, blah, blah. I mean, the government, I think, is going to put up some funding and then...
Yeah, 30 million net, I think they would get in salaries or something.
I don't know. Benzema's Muslim, right? Maybe... the end of his career, religious reasons, maybe. I don't know. Again, I'm Ramos, I'm Modric. If you go there, you're not going to be the biggest star, right? Because Cristiano's there, right? True. So I would think these people have enough money that they wouldn't necessarily be into going, or unless they zealously feel that they want to promote football in Saudi Arabia, which is possible too. I don't know. But what I'm not surprised about is our intermediaries who have a relationship with the Saudis and say, hey, Saudis, guess what? Like, because, you know, common thread here, all these three guys were together at Real Madrid, right?
They have contract in the summer. Hey.
Intermediaries. Yeah, exactly. Saying like, oh, look, I can get to them, hey, if these guys put so much money on the table, are you willing? Would you listen? Yeah, all these things coming together as I see it. Jules, that brings us to an end, but... some huge games coming up this weekend. We'd be remiss if we didn't come back on Monday to talk to you guys all about that. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.